Hello and welcome to episode 5 of our Top Tips for Dentists podcast series. I'm David Pritchard, Head of Marketing here at Sintons. Delighted to be joined once again by Catherine Hope, who is an associate in the employment team here at Sintons. And our podcast today, which will last approximately 15 to 20 minutes, is going to concentrate on employment law jargon that regularly comes up in a sale or purchase in dental transactions. So without any further ado, I'm going to pass you straight over to Catherine. Catherine, good morning and over to you.
Thanks, David. So as David said, I'm going to look at some of the terms that would often come up from an employment perspective when you're looking at a business and asset sale in the dental industry. So what are the kind of things we come across? You'll often, and you no doubt have already come across the term TUPE. Now that stands for the Transfer of Undertakings Protection of Employment Regulations 2006. And basically what it means is it's there to protect employees if the business in which they are employed is changing hands. And it's really important to know that there are two forms of transfer that TUPE can cover. Firstly, is a business transfer, so your straightforward sale of a practice where the business is being sold as a going concern, and that's what we generally will come across in the dental industry. But also, it also covers what's referred to as a service provision change, and that's where there is a change in service provider. That might be, for example, where a service is being outsourced, it's being brought back in-house to a practice, or a practice is changing the third-party provider. So, for example, that might be, for example, you have a business that is contracted to provide out-of-hours dental services, and that contract has been given to another provider, or a practice is bringing that in-house. That will be caught by that, and it will also be covered by TUPE. So if there are employees who are designated as working for that particular service, they will automatically transfer upon that change. Now, what TUPE basically does is it means that the employment of those employees who are employed in the business that's being transferred automatically transfer to the new employer. So, for example, in a sale, they will transfer to the buyer. And that's referred to as the automatic transfer principle. And they'll transfer on their existing terms and they'll maintain their continuity of service. So it's all about protecting them. And what it means for the incoming employer, the buyer, it means they'll step into the shoes of the old employer as if they've been the employer for the period of service. And it's as if the employee's contracts of employment were always with them. And that's why it's really important when you're looking at a business transaction and you are the buyer that you carry out that thorough due diligence, because you would want to know what you're taking on board. What are the risks and potential liabilities? Are there any real issues there that you need to know about and need to seek protection in relation to? Other terms that you might come across are transferor and transferee. Now, transferor means the outgoing employer, so the seller in a business and asset sale. So the owners of the business who are selling the practice, under TUPE, they're often referred to as the transferor. You then have the transferee, and that's the incoming employer, so the buyer, again, in a business and asset sale, or the new service provider in a service provision change. You may also come across employee liability information. Now, under TUPE, under Regulation 11, an outgoing employer, so the seller in a business and asset sale, has a duty to provide the incoming employer, so the buyer, with written details of the transferring employees. And you'll often see that referred to as ELI for employment liability information. Now, that information has to be given at least 28 days before the transfer takes place, although in practice, the buyer will want to obtain that, you know, much earlier, and there will be a thorough due diligence exercise at the outset. Now, the information that has to be provided as a minimum, so what constitutes the employee liability information, is the name and age of employees transferring, their particular employment that you have to give under Section 1 of the Employment Rights Act, things such as, you know, their hours of work, their pay, their holiday entitlement, their place of work, information about any disciplinary procedures that have been taken against or grievances procedures brought by any of the transferring employees within the last 2 years, for example, where the ACAS code or any other particular code or statutory procedure has applied. Also, information about any court or tribunal cases that have been brought by employees in the last 2 years, or that there are reasonable grounds for the seller to believe they might arise out of employment. And also information about any collective agreements that could affect the transferring employees. So that has to be provided as the minimum. Obviously, as part of a due diligence exercise, a buyer would want to know a lot more, and there'll be a lot more in terms of the information they're seeking from the seller. Now, it's important to be aware of that, because a failure to provide that information, it could warrant a minimum award of £500 for employee. So careful to comply with that as an absolute minimum. Inform and consult, that's another term that you may come across, and that's a really important obligation under the TUPE legislation. And this is a joint liability on both the seller and the buyer for example, in a business asset sale, and you both have a duty to inform and, if appropriate, consult with the appropriate representatives of the employees who are affected by the transfer. Now, as a starting point, it's actually appropriate representatives rather than the employees themselves that need to be informed of such information. If you have a practice where you have fewer than 10 employees, then you can speak to them directly. But as a starting point, if you have more than 10 employees, it is actually with appropriate representatives. So you have to give the employees the opportunity to elect representatives. Obviously, in practice, a lot of the time it ends up being, you know, the communication is done with the employees directly, but you should take advice to make sure you're at least complying with the obligations as a minimum. Now, the information that has to be provided to the employees is the fact of the transfer, that it's taking place, the legal, economic and social implications, so what it means for them, for example, that their employment will transfer on their current terms, any measures envisaged by the transferee, the incoming employer. I'll come on to what that means in a minute at the next term, but also certain information about agency workers. Now, the obligation to consult will only kick in if there are actually measures that the incoming employer intends to take. And if that's the case, then you must consult with appropriate representatives. And the purpose there of the consultation is to seek the employee's agreement with those intended measures. Now, it's really important to be aware of this obligation because, as I said before, it lies on both the seller and the buyer in a business and asset sale. And so you need to also make sure that you have appropriate protection in any sale and purchase agreement for any failure on the other party in terms of complying with this obligation, because you will both have different things that you need to do. In terms of an asset sale, the seller, because it remains the employer up until completion, will be the one who has to actually physically inform the employees who are going to be transferring, because they will remain its employees until completion. Now, the buyer will have obligations in terms of needing to inform the seller of certain measures, or if it doesn't intend to take measures, of informing the seller of that point. Now, if there's a failure to inform and consult, employees can claim up to a maximum of 13 weeks gross pay. So it's potentially really large liability if things aren't done properly. So it's really important to take advice in that regard. Next one that come up, as I just mentioned and touched on before, is measures. Now, this is where the liability really lies on the incoming employer, so the buyer in an asset purchase sale. The incoming employer must inform the outgoing employer, so the seller, of any measures that it intends to take in connection with the transfer, which could affect the terms and conditions of the employees. Now, that term measures, it's really widely interpreted, so it can include any positive act or omission by the employer. It could be something as small as changing the date on which employees are going to get paid each month, to being as big as something as an incoming employer being in a position where it's going to have to start a redundancy consultation post-completion because it's going to have too many employees. Now, what the incoming employer has to do is make the outgoing employer aware of any measures that it intends to take. Because if there are any, then the outgoing employer, the seller, will need to consult with the employee representatives in that regard. If there aren't any measures, then great. It just needs to inform the seller of that, and then that's been dealt with. Now, in terms of any measures that it has to inform the seller of, it's only anything that where there is a definite plan or proposal. It has to be something that it intends to do, not something that it might do or it might think about post-completion. There has to be a definite plan there. Something else that you might come across is an ETO. Now, that stands for economical, technical or organizational reason. And that comes up when you're looking at potential changes that a buyer can make to terms and conditions of employment. Now, you'll note that when I referred back to TUPE, the main purpose of that is to protect the terms and conditions of the employees who are transferring under, for example, a business and asset sale. So there are really limited situations where a buyer could come in and actually change those terms. One of those situations is where they have an economic, technical, or organizational reason that involves changes in the workforce or workplace. Now, you'll note that there has to be a change in the workforce or workplace there. And that means, for example, that there will be a change in functions or a change in numbers, so redundancy. A change in workplace also satisfies that particular change. And when we talk about economic reasons, that's down to how a business or organization is performing. Technical reasons will be to do with equipment or processes that an organization uses. And organizational reasons are due to the business or organization structure. So you need to think about, you know, it would have to be fall within that kind of situation if you're wanting to make changes that won't be void. If you simply make changes because you don't like, for example, employees are entitled to generous sick pay terms, just because you don't like that and it's a generous term, you can't just take it away. That would be void at law. Regardless of whether employees agree to it or not. So you have to be aware of that. You can't just come in and harmonize your terms. For example, if you have your own employees who are on different terms, you can't just make everyone's terms the same. If it's a change that is because of the transfer itself, it will be void at law. Also, changes could be made if, for example, they have nothing to do with the transfer. For example, something happened to do with the economy, once the transfer had taken place, then that's obviously completely separate. And that would be a change that would be dealt with in the usual way. On a final note, again, something that will come up in relation to business and asset sales is again unfair dismissal. Now, again, this will only apply if employees have at least 2 years' service. So again, you'd be looking at the service that the employees have in the due diligence process. And now normally, in normal circumstances, if an employee has at least 2 years' service, they have the right not to be unfairly dismissed. And that means that if an employer wants to terminate their contract of employment, they firstly have to have a potentially fair reason. So things such as conduct, redundancy, capability. They also have to show that in the circumstances they've acted reasonably and treating that reason as sufficient reason for dismissal. In practice, that means you have to follow a fair procedure. So for example, in a redundancy situation, you have to go through a fair redundancy consultation process. Now in CHEPE, there is enhanced protection against unfair dismissal. And that means that if you terminate someone's contract simply because of the transfer of their employment, it will be automatically unfair. But they do still have to have that 2 years' service. So it will only apply to those who have that service. But it's just important to be aware of that you can't just come in and terminate someone's contract because you don't want them and they don't fit into your organisation. For example, if you're in a situation where you have your own staff and you are taking on staff from a seller and you're going to have too many and you're looking at a potential redundancy situation, you can't just make the staff that was transferred over to you redundant. You will have to follow a fair redundancy process whereby you will select staff from pools, which will include pooling your own staff and apply fair selection criteria. So that's something to bear in mind. So that's a quick overview of some of the terms that you may well come across from an employment perspective when you're looking at the jargon that comes up in business and asset sales in the dental industry. We're going to be coming up with some more sessions from my property and corporate colleagues, so do keep an eye out for those. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Catherine. Enjoyed listening to that. Very quickly for me, we release our webinars, podcasts and blogs on a regular basis, all of which can be found on our website, www.sintons.co.uk, should you wish to take a look. And that includes all episodes of this podcast series. You can also follow the healthcare team on Twitter at SintonsHC or the employment team at SintonsHR. If you'd like to discuss anything Catherine's raised today further, please don't hesitate to get in touch with her or a member of the team. Catherine can be contacted via telephone 0191 226 7878 or via email catherine.hope@sintons.co.uk. That's all from us today. We will be bringing you episode 6 in about 4 weeks' time. Thank you once again for listening. Stay safe, everyone, and we'll speak to you soon.